Hello, I'm Theo, and I was the Member of Parliament for Stafford and chaired the UK Birth Trauma Inquiry in Parliament. And I have a beautiful daughter, but like many women, my birth was far from straightforward. I suffered from a traumatic birth after a 40-hour labour, postpartum hemorrhage, emergency surgery for my birth injury, and went on to develop PTSD. And it was this experience that led me to start campaigning nationally on ending the postcode lottery in maternity care. So Breaking the Taboo is a new podcast on women's health. And in series one, I'll be looking at the issue of birth trauma by speaking to affected mums and their families, healthcare professionals and campaigners. So if you, like me, feel like you didn't know where to ask for help, or you felt too ashamed to ask, then I hope you know you're not alone and that this podcast is very much here for you. Please get in touch with us with your stories and your reflections on the show, as we'd love to hear from you. And thanks to our sponsor, the law firm Irwin Mitchell. You can follow me on Instagram at Theo Clark MP, or do get in touch with us via our show website, which you'll find in the notes below. And now on to today's show. Well, hello and welcome to today's episode of Breaking the Taboo. And I'm delighted that we're going to talk about a really important subject today, and that's postpartum psychosis. Probably not a subject that we speak about enough in women's health, and that's why I'm delighted to have with me two guests today. The first is Dr. Jessica Herron, who is the Chief Executive of Action on Postpartum Psychosis. And they're a fantastic charity for women and families affected by severe postnatal mental illness. And I also have with me Dr. Sally Wilson, who is an affected mum and also works with the charity as their national training coordinator. So firstly, can I thank you both so much for coming on today's show? I'll be honest, this wasn't an issue that I was aware of several years ago until I started campaigning on improving maternity care. So Jess, perhaps we could just start there to introduce listeners to the topic. What is postpartum psychosis? And could you tell us a bit about the type of symptoms that mothers might exhibit who have it?
So it's a very severe episode of mania or psychosis that comes on very quickly, normally in the days or early weeks after having a baby. For some women, it comes on rapidly and dramatically. They go from being very well to incredibly unwell within hours or days. For some women, it comes on more gradually and will escalate over the postpartum weeks. When we say psychosis, what we really mean is completely losing touch with reality. So believing things that can't be true, seeing, hearing, smelling, or sensing things that couldn't actually be happening. And this often occurs alongside mania, which is elation, not needing to sleep, talking very rapidly, expressing very unusual ideas. For example, women might feel that they've won the lottery, or that they have special powers, or their baby has special powers. But it can also go alongside depression, anxiety, irritability, fear, intense paranoia, and quite often a perplexity or really severe confusion, where women can forget how to do even very basic things. The psychosis can be very fleeting and rapidly changing, or it can be fixed, and it can be fluctuating as well. So while a woman might seem okay for a period of time, it can be very kaleidoscopic, and symptoms come and go. So what we know is that childbirth is the most potent known trigger of episodes of mania and psychosis. Postpartum psychosis happens to about 1 to 2 in every 1,000 women after childbirth. With current birth rates in the UK, that's about 1,200 women every year developing an episode, and about 140,000 women around the world will develop postpartum psychosis. It's a medical emergency. Care is needed very quickly, both because it escalates very rapidly, but also because women are responsible for a vulnerable newborn. So care is needed within 4 hours of women where postpartum psychosis is suspected, People need to be assessed within 4 hours, and ideally same day admission to a specialist mother and baby unit. What we know about postpartum psychosis is it can be severe and risky, and we know that psychiatric illness is a leading cause of mums dying in the 12 months after having a baby.
Well, thank you so much for setting out so clearly what it is. And what struck me listening to what you just said, Jess, is that this is much more extreme than what people might call the baby blues or postnatal depression. So could you just explain a bit more about the difference so that they understand this really is a much more severe form of mental health than postnatal depression?
Yeah, it's a really important distinction. So sometimes postpartum psychosis is viewed on a severity continuum with postnatal depression. But what we know is that many episodes are actually manic in nature, where women don't experience any depression but experience extreme elation. Quite often they'll suffer from depression later, but not always. So we think it's an illness much more linked to bipolar disorder than on a depressive continuum. So the reason the distinction is really important is because the level of risk differs. So women at high risk will need a very specific care package during pregnancy and in the postpartum. So we know that the risk factors are very different between postnatal depression and postpartum psychosis. The causes are different, symptoms, the timing of onset is different as well. Different treatments are needed, so it's important not to confuse depression with psychosis. And as well, the course and outcomes are different for women who have purely postnatal depression and women who have postpartum mania or psychosis, perhaps followed by postnatal depression afterwards.
Well, that's incredibly useful to make that distinction. And I should add for listeners today that the reason I was so keen to discuss this episode is that when I was a Member of Parliament in Stafford, I didn't know that my constituency had one of the only mum and baby units in the country, which is a specialised place for mothers who've suffered from postpartum psychosis to be looked after with their baby. And it was really heartbreaking for me to meet with some of those mothers and to hear firsthand their experiences. And it was so clear that they needed to have this incredibly specialist care. So Sally, perhaps if I could come to you, thank you so much for so bravely sharing your story on today's show. And I think it's so helpful for listeners to hear kind of that firsthand experience. So if you wouldn't mind just talking briefly about what happened to you when you had your daughter.
So it's about 10 years ago, actually 10 years ago this Tuesday, just gone. My little one was 10 years old. So it was actually really scary and really terrifying and frightening at the time. I'd had no kind of previous history of severe mental illness, so it's completely out of the blue for me. My pregnancy was okay. I was kind of worked and exercised quite late into it. There were no kind of real issues during my pregnancy. And then I was about a week overdue, and I went in to, I won't go into long details about the labour, but it was kind of a few days later and it wasn't progressing. Had an induction and eventually had her by emergency C-section. So it was a little bit traumatic at the time. Lots of things kind of had an infection and suspected preeclampsia. So lots of kind of physical things going on as well. And then for me, really, I became really poorly as soon as I came round from the general anaesthetic. So I was just really confused, which is quite normal, obviously, after a general anaesthetic. But that confusion just kind of carried on throughout that day. So I was still in the labour room where I'd been, and just nothing kind of made sense. I couldn't work out, you know, where my daughter had come from. I couldn't work out who the doctors and midwives and nurses were. And that confusion kind of came in and out, as Jess talked about. Sort of, I would sort of feel a bit lucid and then I'd get really confused and then couldn't work out how much time had passed. So that was my main kind of symptom to start with, confusion and kind of feeling really surreal at the time. So yeah, I became pretty poorly really quickly after giving birth, really. So.
Wow. Well, firstly, thank you for starting there and explaining what happened straight after the birth. Could I just ask then, in terms of symptoms, I know you've talked about how your husband obviously noted your behaviour. So what was it that kind of triggered that response that you actually needed specialist help with your mental health? And what should other mums listening to the show who are exhibiting similar signs be watching out for?
Yeah, so in those first few kind of hours and days, I had quite subtle symptoms. So I didn't have what we kind of think of as full-blown psychotic symptoms. So I had this real confusion, feeling really surreal, feeling this real fear, as Jess described, that something terrible was going to happen. I couldn't work out what it was, just this real horrible feeling that something bad was going to happen, and quite confused. I was quite introverted. So that's my personality. So you couldn't see a lot from the outside in terms of my behavior in those first kind of few hours and days. But I kept telling people that something wasn't quite right. I was like, I know something's not right with me, but I can't explain what it is. I got quite obsessed with lots of different things, like my blood pressure scores and bloods and everything that all the doctors were doing and nurses were doing. And then eventually my behaviour probably did, you were able to observe things like I was kind of pacing up and down on the phone all the time, which I'd just given birth, just had a C-section. I was sort of up and down, and that's not kind of normal for me, sort of being really busy and on the phone. And then I couldn't sleep that night of giving birth. So I just could not switch off. My brain was kind of manic, couldn't relax. And that's when I think people started to notice that something wasn't quite right, that I couldn't sleep. And I was sort of saying sort of things that didn't quite make sense, sort of asking, where I was and what had happened to me, and asked the kind of midwives to go through everything that had happened leading up to those few days. And then eventually I didn't sleep for a few nights, and I had a sort of a realization about what everything was about in my own mind. And at that point, then I was completely kind of detached from reality. I thought that I'd kind of died. I was living in an afterlife and didn't believe that Ella was, my daughter was mine, really. So that's really where we started to get help. So the psychiatric liaison team were informed, and then I was admitted to a general psychiatric unit within a few days of giving birth, really.
Gosh, well, that strikes so much with some of the listeners who've written into me on the show. And I remember when I met a mum in the Stafford St George's Hospital in their mother and baby unit. So I remember one of the mums said to me that she started trying to give her baby away to the healthcare professionals working in the ward, and kept saying, "It's not my baby." And I thought, just how heartbreaking to hear that her, break from reality was so strong that she didn't even believe it was her own child. So Jess, if I could just come back to you. I mean, obviously we need to have a lot more awareness of postpartum psychosis as an issue. So what should sort of families, healthcare professionals, first responders be aware of, and what should they be looking out for?
As Sally explained, there often are a few symptoms leading up to becoming very unwell. That might be mums who are feeling like super mum, or like they can do everything, or it might be mums feeling very scared or paranoid. But what we know is that there are so many, women experience so many different emotions in the early days. So it's very hard to identify any symptoms that are definitely a precursor to postpartum psychosis. So it's health professionals really need to monitor those early symptoms, particularly at women that we know are at high risk of postpartum psychosis. Once it's clear that symptoms are becoming unusual, then at that point, partners, families, it's normally not women don't normally realize that they're unwell. As Sally explained, sometimes they just feel that something's not quite right but can't quite put their finger on it, and some women might not think they're unwell at all. They might believe that it's everyone else who's unwell, that their partner's unwell, and try and get help for them. So once postpartum psychosis is suspected, then people should contact the GP, health visitor, midwife very urgently, and explain that they think it might be postpartum psychosis, in which case they should be assessed within 4 hours. Psychosis that happens at other times is normally much more gradual in onset. And so people who are not experienced in postpartum psychosis might think that they've got days, if not weeks, to arrange admission. But that's not the case with postpartum psychosis. Ideally, women need to be admitted to a mother and baby unit very rapidly.
Well, that goes back to Sally's point. I mean, Sally, I'm shocked to hear that you were only admitted to a general psychiatric ward and not a specialist unit. So presumably that also meant that very tragically you were separated from your daughter after the birth. So could you talk a bit about those kind of first few days and being in hospital and what it was like?
I think at the time I was so poorly and at the time I believed that, as you say, very similarly, that Ella wasn't my daughter wasn't really there and she wasn't really mine. So I was so poorly that I needed to be admitted to a general psychiatric unit. Unfortunately, there wasn't a mother and baby unit or specialist perinatal mental health teams at the time. Things have changed a lot since then. Yeah, so I was taken from the maternity unit round the corner to the general psychiatric unit. And it was just, I just remember it being a bit of a maze, not a very nice place. I was lucky to have my own room just because I think I was so poorly. But I just didn't really understand why I was there. So I was still in the middle of psychosis, thinking that I'd been taken to prison and being locked up for something that I'd done. So I didn't fully understand why I was there. Didn't really understand that I could leave either. I wasn't sectioned. I was under voluntary admission. And I think that kind of couple of weeks was just about me being, yeah, admitted and getting the medication in that I needed. But I was just really scared at the time. I didn't understand why I was there. I was, you know, middle of psychosis, really scary place for me at the time. And on top of that, being separated from my daughter, which kind of fed into my psychosis of her not being around as well. So yeah, really traumatic time. And yeah, I just wanted to get out of there as soon as I could, really. So
yeah, well, I'm so sorry to hear about your experience. And I think so important that we do have mother and baby units, because I think keeping the mum together with the child is so important to not exacerbate the symptoms. And that's something that I've been campaigning for in Parliament and will continue to do so, because we must have these specialist services. So obviously, Sally, that must have been hugely traumatising as well for your partner, and the impact on your wider family. Presumably he had to step up to look after your daughter considerably in that time that you were in hospital. So could you just talk a bit about the wider impact on the rest of your family during that time?
Yeah, I think, well, for him, it was just devastating. So he'd gone from, you know, me giving birth to then being admitted to a general psychiatric unit. And just, yeah, it was just incredibly traumatic for him at the time. We were lucky to have his family and my family come up and sort of chip in and help out. But yeah, he didn't fully understand either what was going on. For him, it was suddenly he'd lost his wife into a general psychiatric unit. Was it ever going to get better? What did it mean? It was a really, really scary time. Yeah, and he had to look after our daughter, really, for those first few weeks with help. But yeah, just completely different start to family life than we thought it was going to be, really. So, and then in terms of the family, I didn't fully understand what was going on, but neither did, you know, kind of my partner. And therefore, you know, it's hard for wider family to understand what's happening. And the fact that no one had really heard of it either amongst any of us, of any of our family, it was really hard to kind of go through something that we'd never really heard of either.
Well, I'm very struck by what you just said about your partner, because I've had a lot of fathers write into the show to say having something go wrong either during the birth, and some of them have gone on to have PTSD symptoms from witnessing a traumatic birth, or as you said, they've had to step up to look after the baby in a way that they were completely not expecting after the birth. Some of them couldn't go back to work after their 2-week paternity leave. So if listeners are interested in that, I do have a dedicated episode for fathers about birth trauma, which is definitely worth listening to. So if we could talk a bit, Jess, about kind of treatment and sort of pathways and how mums can get help who've been affected. Could you just talk a bit about what are the options out there for families who've been affected by this?
For most women, they'll need very rapidly antipsychotic and mood stabiliser treatment. That seems to be the most effective way to quickly get better. Ideally, they need to be in a specialist mother and baby unit. Once symptoms start abating, then they need specialist psychology input, and peer support is really beneficial in long-term recovering fully from the illness, which I know we'll talk about a bit more later. But in terms of mother and baby units, we know that's the number one most important thing to women and families in recovering fully. So specialist mother and baby units are special places where the professionals have a specialist knowledge of the safety and efficacy of various medications in pregnancy, breastfeeding and the postpartum, which can be different to other times. They can look after the physical postpartum care needs that women have quite often. Women will still be bleeding, will need to express, all those things that women will have, as part of the multidisciplinary team, they have midwives, health visitors coming in. So it's a very specialist way to look after women with postnatal mental health problems. They have specialist baby care facilities, changing cots, bathing, and they can also work in a very in-depth way on parenting confidence and parenting skills as women recover. And they act as a fantastic education hub and a hub for identifying women at high risk in the community. So really that specialist knowledge starts spreading through the communities, and around mother and baby units, we find that GPs are better educated, midwives, health visitors. And so they're a really important service to have in all regions of the country. In APP, you know, we hear every day of the lifelong trauma and anger that women feel when they're not admitted to a mother and baby unit. And our surveys show that women feel safer, more satisfied with care. They feel more recovered at discharge and more confident with their baby when they've been to a mother and baby unit. And we know there are various areas of the country where there's no mother and baby unit at all. For example, Northern Ireland, and there's still not enough units in England, Scotland and Wales, where we know that some women travel great distances for care, or are not offered units, or there's no beds available. So it's a really important campaign for APP to make sure that all women can access mother and baby unit care.
Imagine being told your son would never be able to walk or talk. When we didn't know where to turn, Erwin Mitchell were there.
Our legal and financial experts understand the impact of a serious injury. We help our clients receive the best possible medical care, rehabilitation and compensation.
My son is now 12. He can walk, he can talk, and he makes me so happy.
At Erwin Mitchell, we'll help you to imagine what's possible so nothing feels impossible. Authorised and regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority.
And Sally, would you mind talking a bit about some of the treatments that you had? I know you had ECT, which some mums listening might not have heard of, but if you could just perhaps talk a bit about what did help you with your recovery.
So when I was admitted to the general unit, I was started immediately on antipsychotics, anti-anxiety, antidepressants, and really to get that sleep in as well. I think that's really important for in those first few days to get that sleep corrected in postpartum psychosis. So yeah, I started on the medication, and then I was discharged and treated at home by home treatment team, community mental health team, and I saw a psychiatrist as an outpatient. So I had antipsychotics for quite a long time, quite a few months, but I still had these kind of ongoing kind of psychotic symptoms. And that was, like Jess said, it was quite fixed on what had happened in the hospital. But there was also lots of changing, different delusions and hallucinations, things that I was kind of hearing and seeing that weren't really there. And I was getting obsessed and paranoid with lots of different things. And then eventually I started to kind of get severe depression at the same time. So it was a real kind of battle every day with these kind of ongoing symptoms. So I tried lots of different antipsychotics, which for some reason for me, they weren't working. Maybe I needed that kind of specialist care around me to monitor me, you know, every day. We came across APP actually at the same time, and we were signposted to a specialist secondary psychiatry service, and they worked with my team at the time. And they suggested, because it was quite a few months down the line, it's sort of 8-9 months down the line, that we would try electroconvulsive therapy or ECT. So I had that as an outpatient, and I would have it twice a week for 5 weeks. And I would go in and just see the psychiatrist. You have a general anaesthetic, so it's quite uneventful because you're asleep during it, and a muscle relaxant, and then it's the idea is a kind of electric shock to kickstart your brain back into things, really. So we don't know why it works, but for me it quite literally did save my life at the time. So yeah, so that was kind of the start of my kind of recovery and my symptoms reducing, really.
I think it's really important for mums listening to know that there is help out there. And the purpose of this podcast is firstly to break the taboo by speaking about these difficult subjects. So thank you so much for sharing your personal story, but also to signpost mum to resources of where they can get help. And I'm interested to also think about the importance of peer support, as we know that speaking to, you know, other mothers with lived experience is so important. You know, I found that myself when I first shared my own experience of having a traumatic birth, that, you know, meeting other mums who'd had similar experiences made you feel less alone. And I think that this podcast is helping to build that community for families out there. So Jess, could we talk a bit about the importance of peer support, and what is that, and how can families access it?
As we've heard from Sal, postpartum psychosis is such a frightening experience, and it can impact on every part of a woman's life, her relationships, her community support, her self-esteem, parenting confidence. We know it can take time to recover. So most women say that really it takes between 12 months and 3 years to feel fully recovered. Because of the prevalence, it's very hard to meet people in your normal life who've had postpartum psychosis. So by bringing together a massive community of women and families who've had it, we can help show women, you know, give real evidence that full recovery will happen, give them hope that everything will be okay. They will be the parents, they will be the mums that they wanted to be. Our peer supporters are trained in signposting as well, so they can handhold through care. They can help women feel less frightened of their health professionals and help to direct women to the information they need and provide that support through recovery. So we deliver the charity peer support in many different ways. So we've got a community forum that has around 3,000 members now, where women can ask questions, families can ask questions, our trained volunteers man it and can signpost people to the support they need. And it's lovely to see someone reach out and ask a question, and, you know, there can be 30 or 40 volunteers that jump on to share their stories and share bits of information that they found useful. We also have a one-to-one peer support service where people can either be supported in person or via email or video call, depending on where they are in the country. We have cafe groups where people can meet together as a group in particular regions to get support with those ongoing issues that happen after postpartum psychosis. So it can help women to manage risk of relapse and just provide that community and that peer support for the months and often, you know, years that the impact of postpartum psychosis lasts. We have embedded projects in three mother and baby units. So we've got teams of peer supporters that can support families really early at that most frightening moment. And all of our peer supporters have been there. They know what it's like to be frightened, to not know what's going on. And so they're really good at dealing with incredibly ill women and giving them hope and treating them compassionately. And they can provide information and peer support for families as well as at that critical time. So our mother and baby unit projects are really important in getting that hope early. As we've heard already from Sally, it's incredibly impacting on dads and co-parents trying to get help, feeling disloyal because they're seeking admission for their partner. Partners are losing their own support, which is, you know, often their wife. And so we run a partners peer support group and have a group of trained dads that can talk to other dads that are struggling through recovery. We've also got a grandparents group that happens quarterly, and a few specialist groups as well for mums that face particular issues. So there's one for women who have ongoing bipolar after postpartum psychosis. There's an LGBT families group, a Muslim women's group. We're just setting up a Black mums group. And also we've got a bereaved families group for families that have lost a loved one to postpartum psychosis and need support as they navigate all the things they have to go through. And we know our peer support service is absolutely life-saving. In our last annual survey, around 50% of women who use the service say they experienced suicidal thoughts while they were recovering. And about 46% of users of the service said they might not be alive if they hadn't found APP. So we know the service is so important.
Wow. And I remember reading that statistic about the proportion of mums committing suicide within a year of giving birth, and how shocked I was to read that when we wrote the Birth Trauma Inquiry in Parliament. And that's why charities like yours are so important in providing this service. And Jess just gave a really helpful overview of the kind of peer support services. Sally, I'm interested to know, is that something that you accessed, and how did you find it helpful as an affected mum yourself?
Yeah, thank you. I did access it. I'm slightly biased because I think I'm one of those that it did save my life. So for me, I was able to access one-to-one peer support. So that was through a messaging service at the time. We have kind of video and phone calls now as well. And so I was matched with someone that had a really similar experience to me, and I could ask her anything about postpartum psychosis. So I was able to talk to her whilst I was really poorly, you know, whilst I was recovering as well. And she just gave me that hope, really, that, I, you know, things weren't always going to be this way. And I remember her writing things like, just hold on, I promise you, you will get better. So it was just, yeah, gave me that massive hope in that kind of dark time. And then later on, I then started to meet lots of women that had been through the same thing. And so during my recovery, I struggled with a lot of things. So the ECT was the start of my recovery in terms of symptoms reducing, like psychosis and depression. But then it took me a good couple of years to get over everything, really, kind of coming back into the room, the shock of everything, the guilt associated with my daughter. Yeah, recovering from a severe mental illness, being in a psychiatric unit, my own kind of self-stigma of, you know, how could I have ended up with a severe mental illness? So when I met all these incredible women that had been through something similar, it was just a massive part of my recovery, really. So, yeah, I'm slightly biased because it saved my life. So.
Well, first, I'm so pleased to hear, Sally, that it did make the difference. And I think if anyone's listening to the show today thinking, I know somebody who's having a similar experience to Sally, you know, do encourage them to get help. There is help out there. We'll put resources in all the show notes so you know where to access it. And Sally, I was just struck when I was listening to you that a lot of what you've just said chimes with a lot of the feedback that I've been sent in by listeners to the show, that they really felt stigmatised when they'd had a traumatic birth and something had gone wrong. They didn't feel like they could talk about it to, you know, friends, family, colleagues. And one topic that came up a lot was about bonding with their baby and people feeling a real shame that they didn't have kind of what they were expecting if they're like in pregnancy when their baby arrived. So I don't know if you had similar issues with your daughter, but I'm interested to know if you did and what helped or what changed as you kind of went through that period of recovery.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously this is just my experience. People will experience bonding very differently across postpartum psychosis. But for me personally, I wasn't really there physically in the first few weeks of her life because I was in the psychiatric unit. So that was quite hard. And then I wasn't really there emotionally, I'd say, probably for the first year. So from my perspective, I didn't feel that bond and I didn't have that bond with her. But I just feel like that was probably delayed. So as I got better and started to recover, that bond started to kind of come from my side. All her needs were met. She was absolutely fine. Like lots of people would say, you know, she's smiling, she's happy, she's absolutely fine, hitting, you know. But for me personally, I just didn't feel that at all. And that was really difficult. So, you know, I felt very guilty about that and felt very sad about all that. And it did take a long time to kind of get over that side of things. And I think that's what's really important with the specialist care, is that you can have that kind of, you know, work around that and talk through all those things, in the sense, you know, it's normal within a severe mental illness to have these things going on. And like you say, it's really difficult to talk about those things, particularly with people that haven't been through it. You don't want to tell people that you don't feel these things or you don't have a bond. But for me personally, I just had to sort of say, you know, I was really ill then and things were a bit delayed, but things are very different to how they were back then.
And what you said, Sally, echoes with what another mum who came on the show in our first episode, Jill Castle, said. And she'd had, you know, different experience to you. She suffered a fourth degree tear, but she also couldn't bond with her son at all. But it did definitely come later. So I think if listeners are worried about that, I think it's really helpful to have these stories that they had a delayed bond, but actually they were able to at a later date. And it doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. I think that's a really important point. I'd just like to emphasise that all of these things are happening to you not because of you, and it's not your fault, and please do ask for help. So on that point specifically, Jess, if we could just chat a bit about Action on Postpartum Psychosis. For anyone who doesn't know them, APP is a fantastic charity. I'm constantly kind of lobbying for funding for them from the government because I think it's so important. If you could just explain what the charity does and how people can signpost themselves to it for help.
So as we've talked about, you know, in the early days of APP, postpartum psychosis was surrounded by so much shame and stigma and silence. And so women didn't talk about it. Often, you know, women were told not to talk about their experience outside the family home for fear of the stigma they'd experience in their communities. APP's first task really was to bring this illness out into the open. And we did that by building a large PP community, bringing together women and families to meet, talk, to start understanding that their illness wasn't something that they should be ashamed of, that it's an illness, that many of the same symptoms happen to all women who have postpartum psychosis. And that helped us try and reduce isolation, to increase the level of information out there, and to start addressing suicide rates relating to postpartum psychosis. So APP started as a collaboration between women and families who've had experience, world-leading academics and specialist health professionals. Most of our staff team have personal experience of postpartum psychosis. What we try to do is manage the lifelong impacts of postpartum psychosis by bringing people into our large, positive, forward-looking community to help them change the future for others, to support recovery, to support them as they're planning further pregnancies, to support them as they navigate menopause and grandparenthood after postpartum psychosis. It seems to impact every part of a woman's life. So as well as our community, we also train health professionals. And when we started, it was something that was really only known to a handful of specialist professionals. But now the majority of midwives, health visitors, GPs have heard of postpartum psychosis. We also try and raise awareness, address some of the stigma and misinformation that's out there. We campaign for mother and baby units and appropriate care pathways in all regions of the country. We also try and encourage research into postpartum psychosis. I guess we're aware that it's only really by research into the causes will we ever stop this frightening, awful illness from happening. And funding for research has been very hard to come by in postpartum psychosis. But I think by raising awareness, by supporting women to share their stories, gradually there's getting to be more awareness of the amount of research we need to do to understand the causes and to stop these episodes happening.
That's so helpful to know. So I will make sure that we've got a link to the charity's work, which you can find in the show notes and more information on my website. So do click on them and find out what they do. And we're coming towards the end of the episode, so I always like to ask my guests the same sort of two questions. And the first, which relates to what you've just been saying, Jess, is about access to help and resources. And we try to be really practical on breaking the taboo and to signpost affected families to where they can get help. So Sally, I wonder if there's one particular thing that you'd like to recommend to anyone listening today, where, you know, it could be a book or a podcast or somewhere they can access help that you'd like to share today.
I hope I don't take Jess's one. yeah, so on our website, we've got some insider guides that are written for people that are going through it, partners, family members, and then those are at risk of developing it. So they were written by those with lived experience, with clinicians and professionals. So all the information there is in terms of, you know, what it is, what it looks like to recover, and what you might need to know, and what support you should be getting are in those insider guides, which you can download from our website, or people can ask for kind of hard copies as well if they need them. And when I was poorly, we accessed them, and they were just a really useful resource in terms of what it was and what we were going through and what we could expect to go through.
That's really helpful. And Jess, what would you like to signpost listeners to?
Yeah, I'd like to draw attention to our antenatal toolkit, preparing expectant families for the knowledge that although it's a very unlikely outcome of pregnancy, making sure they know what the symptoms are to look out for and they know how to help seek help if it happens. I think being prepared is so important, and knowing that women do recover from this, that it's not the end of the world, that if you get good help, it can just become part of the family story, family history. But our antenatal toolkit is fantastic. It's just got a few key points about what postpartum psychosis is, what to look out for. There's a version for expectant families. There's a version for antenatal educators and midwives to help them teach people about what to look out for. There's also a video by midwife Marley that's about 3 minutes long that trains midwives to have the conversation about what to look out for. So I think it's, really useful for women and health professionals to look at.
Well, those are some really practical advice. And I'm struck there, Jess, you actually mentioned about training for healthcare professionals, and that's not something we've touched on, yes. But Sally, I wonder with your day job hat on, if you could just talk a bit about the training that's required for healthcare professionals on this particular issue.
Yeah, so my role now really is to coordinate the training in postpartum psychosis for APP. So I was lucky enough to come on board about 5 years ago, and I used my kind of academic background along with lived experience. And what one of our main aims really is to make sure that all health professionals working with women and families in the perinatal period know about postpartum psychosis, know how to spot the signs and symptoms, and know what treatment should look like. This has massively increased over the last kind of 10 years, but there's still quite a bit of work to do in terms of making sure that non-specialists know about it and know how to get help, really. So we have different things that we can offer. We offer kind of our own kind of in-depth training, which is like a day training about postpartum psychosis and what we know, and using everything we know in APP to kind of use that as the content. But then we also offer awareness talks, which are kind of an hour long, and people can come and tell their story and talk about what it's like to go through it, just to kind of increase the general awareness around that. Yeah, so we're quite busy delivering all that training, but it's good to get those messages out there to everyone that we possibly can.
Yeah, that's such an important point. And then just final question for you both is, and I say this as a kind of recovering ex-politician, is it's really important that the government, takes action on improving services for mums like this. So Jess, what would you like to see the government do to take action on tackling postpartum psychosis and just in general improving maternity care provision across the UK?
There's a number of things, really. I think all women with postpartum psychosis having access to a mother and baby unit within a reasonable distance of their home is essential for recovery and to make sure they're providing the right support for women. It can be very hard for partners when they're having to do massive round trips every day to go and visit their partner and child. And we know that's the best place for women to receive support. I would like to see proper support into understanding the causes of postpartum psychosis, supporting us to fund research and having our lived experience staff and experts input their knowledge into where that research should be best placed. Funding for third sector organisations that are providing support for women with maternal mental health problems is essential. At the moment, it's very frustrating that we as a team, with all of our expertise, spend a great deal of our time trying to raise funds to keep what we know are life-saving services open. So I think proper long-term consideration of how these services are funded. A plea as well. I guess we're concerned at the moment that the NHS is so stretched that maternity and perinatal mental health services are stretched, and therefore people are leaving the workforce in droves. And I think maintaining an expert, well-trained, compassionate, skilled workforce when there's such a massive staff turnover is impossible. So I think just looking at how we keep that expertise in maternity and perinatal mental health services to keep them operating safely and properly is really important.
Well, I agree with everything you just said, Jess. And in fact, in my book coming out called Breaking the Taboo on Birth Trauma in May, I have a maternity manifesto in at the back to make all of these arguments to the future government to make sure that they're implementing our recommendations. Sally, as an affected mum, what would you like to see the Prime Minister taking action on?
I think Jess has said a lot of things already, but I think listening to people's voices, I think we've made great change in the past, coming together as collective voices and having that opportunity to be heard. You know, it comes from the ground. This is what's going on the ground. And then we've had recommendations change from that. So I just think that, you know, having that continued dialogue with people that are going through it and listening to those people that are going through it as well.
Well, can I thank you both so much for coming on today's show? Firstly, Sally, thank you for so bravely sharing your story. And the feedback we've had from listeners is it's incredibly powerful to hear that firsthand testimony and to know that they're not alone and that you did get help and you're feeling much better and that they can too. And Jess, that was so helpful to have a bit more information about what postpartum psychosis is and the wonderful work of your charity. So if listeners are enjoying the show, please do rate us on iTunes or Spotify. Please do share it with friends and family and colleagues. We want to make sure we reach as many families as possible. And I'm delighted to announce that having had such a huge response from listeners to our first series, that we are going to do a second series. So watch this space for more news. Please do keep sending me in your ideas for episodes. We do read all of the comments that you send us on social media or the emails that I receive via my website. And all of that informs ideas for future episodes. So thank you for joining us today on Breaking the Taboo, and stay tuned for future episodes.